Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ, 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our studio in East County. Today, we open our show with some major breaking news. The California Public Utilities Commission has ruled against SDG&E, finding that the utility cannot charge ratepayers for its uninsured losses in the 2007 wildfires, which state regulators found were caused by SDG&E equipment. Flu cases are up sharply over this time last year, and four people have died so far locally. We'll have details. Firefighters risk their lives to protect us during fires and other emergencies, but you may be shocked to learn that more firefighters are dying of suicide each year than are killed on the job fighting fires. Now, one retired fire battalion chief is fighting to reverse this deadly trend. Hear how on today's show. A vacation in Hawaii turned tragic for an East County couple swept over a waterfall, and now the community here is grieving the loss of George and Gladys Novinger, owners of a winery and wedding venue in Spring Valley. On Green Scene, learn about a Ramona school district and other local government entities honored by the Federal Environmental Protection Agency for their efforts to reduce food waste and help people in need. Also hear about efforts launched to repeal California's new gas tax and get some good news about a brand new habitat at Lions, Tigers, and Bears in Alpine for rescued exotic animals, including a white lion. On Crime Beat, we'll have some disturbing details about a sheriff's deputy accused of groping and sexually assaulting multiple women, including two alleged victims in East County. Learn why Escondido is being sued over its vote to privatize the city's public library, and why the American Library Association is speaking out against turning public libraries over to private corporations. The annual Toys for Tots drive is underway across San Diego County with drop-off locations at local airports. Find out how you can help brighten a child's holiday on today's show. On our Capitol Report, hear a shocking story about President Donald Trump denying disaster aid to people who lost homes, businesses, and loved ones in the Northern California wildfire. The president is also drawing criticism from Asian American legislators in California after ICE rounded up Southeast Asian refugees for deportation, including some who came here as children after the Vietnam War. Learn more on today's show. From Public News Service, hear why state and local governments are warning that they may have to raise your taxes if cuts in the proposed federal tax bill become law. Then on Destination East County, we'll have all the most fun festivals and events coming up across our region, including a parade of lights and snow carnival, a holiday bonfire, sleigh rides, tree lightings, a jazz and big band concert, theatrical performances, a carnival, and more. Now, if you're stumped for holiday conversations with your relatives, we'll have some holiday trivia for you later on today. Plus, if you're traveling anytime soon, be sure to listen up and learn how runway closures at San Diego's airports could affect late-night flights. Before you do your holiday shopping, listen up for news about recalls of hoverboards due to fire hazards. And to start the holiday season, we'll end our show today with some country Christmas music from the U.S. Air Force Band. So stay tuned for all of these stories on today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. 10 years after the 2007 firestorms, at the time the worst in California's history, the California Public Utilities Commission ruled Thursday that San Diego Gas and Electric cannot charge ratepayers $379 million for the utility's uninsured losses due to damages from those 2007 firestorms. By a unanimous decision, the CPUC ruled that SDG&E did not reasonably manage and operate its equipment, which CAL FIRE found caused or contributed to the Witch, Guajito, and Rice fires. Dr. Christine Ross, a veterinarian who lost her home, business, and intellectual property in the fires, greeted the news with joy. "Fabulous. That is such good news," she told us when we called to inform her of the decision, and thanked us for reporting on the controversy through the years. Dr. Ross, one of the few fire survivors who has not settled her case against SDG&E, says it remains in the court system on appeal. Thursday's CPUC decision upholds the recommendation of two administrative law judges. It comes after multiple delays and revelations that utility company executives from SDG&E, PG&E, and Southern California Edison held ex parte meetings with commission staff in an effort to lobby the commission to rule on behalf of utilities. This decision sets a precedent that could be used to hold PG&E responsible for the deadly firestorms that ravaged Northern California recently. SDG&E has denied that its equipment caused the fires in 2007, faulting excessive winds for the Witch Fire, a fallen branch for the Guajito Fire, and a Cox cable line that came in contact with a power line for the Rice Fire. But SDG&E has paid out over $2 billion in settlements and other costs related to the fires. Lee Chauvrin, SDG&E's Senior Vice President and Chief Regulatory Officer, issued a statement indicating that SDG&E strongly disagrees with the decision, adding, "We will vigorously pursue all available avenues to overturn this decision." In a separate action Thursday, consumer attorneys Mike Aguirre and Maria Severson released a study that documents how the Public Utilities Commission is controlled by three investor-owned utilities that it is supposed to regulate: Sempra, the parent company of SDG&E, PG&E, and Edison. The study concludes the utilities have placed the CPUC into a severe and advanced case of regulatory capture. Radiation leaks, fatal explosions, deadly fires, and debilitating methane leaks have become commonplace for the people of California. Excuse-making, cover-up, delayed investigation, and secret disruption of reasoned ALJ, that's administrative law judge decisions, following hearings is the CPUC corporate culture under the PV Picker era. The consumer attorney's study concludes that the CPUC must make radical changes to restore it to its fundamental mission of protecting the safety of the people it is supposed to be serving, adding, "How many more lives can we lose?" Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Gene Carpenter with a health report. Flu cases in San Diego County are up sharply over last year, and four people have died so far this season, County Health and Human Services Agency has announced. To date, a total of 574 lab-confirmed cases have been reported in the region this season, 400 more than the 174 that had been reported at the same time last year. The latest death was a 92-year-old man who died November 11 of influenza A. One death had been reported in San Diego County at this time last season. Wilma Wooten, County Public Health Officer, warns the flu can be deadly, especially for vulnerable populations. The best protection against the flu is getting vaccinated. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention recommends that everyone 6 months and older get a flu shot every year. It takes 2 weeks for immunity to develop. Vaccination is especially important for people who are at high risk of developing serious complications from influenza. They include people with chronic medical conditions like asthma, diabetes, and lung disease, even if symptoms are under control, pregnant women, people 65 years and older, and people who live with or care for others who are at higher risk. The flu vaccine is available at doctor's offices and retail pharmacies. If you don't have medical insurance, you can go to a county public health center to get vaccinated. For a list of locations, visit www.sdiz.org or call 211. In addition to getting vaccinated to reduce your odds of catching the flu, health officials advise washing hands thoroughly and often, using hand sanitizers, staying away from people who are sick, avoiding touching your eyes, nose, or mouth, cleaning commonly touched surfaces, and if you are sick, stay home to avoid infecting others.
Last year, 69 firefighters in the United States died in the line of duty, the National Fire Protection Association reports. But here's a shocking fact. Far more, 139 firefighters took their own lives. So far this year, 86 firefighters have been lost through suicide, including CAL FIRE Captain Ryan Mitchell, who killed himself at the Pine Valley Bridge in San Diego's East County in November. Jeff Dill, the CEO and founder of the Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance, is determined to save firefighters' lives through special workshops designed by a firefighter for a firefighter. The workshops are offered to fire departments across the nation now. They focus on behavioral health awareness, suicide prevention, and making resources available to help firefighters and their families. Dill says, 5 years ago, no one was taking down these names and numbers. He's a retired battalion chief who got his master's degree in counseling and has since done research to compile data on firefighter suicides and then went on to create programs to help prevent such tragedies. Since 1880, when the earliest known firefighter suicide occurred, a fire chief in New York, at least 1,078 firefighters have killed themselves. 60 of those deaths were in California, the fifth highest rate in the nation. Those numbers have spiked in recent years due in part to improved reporting, but also increased stress. Before the 9/11 attacks in 2001, no year had more than 47 firefighter suicides. Since then, every year but one has been higher. Three of the past 4 years have seen suicides in triple digits. Most of these are young firefighters in the prime of life. The vast majority were active duty, although some were retired, on disability, had resigned, or been fired. Most firefighter suicides are with guns, which accounted for 627 of the 1,078 deaths to date. So why do so many firefighters take their own lives? Too often, the cause is unknown. The number one known cause is marital or family relationship problems. Second is depression, followed by addiction, physical or mental health issues, as well as post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD. Health-related suicides have increased sharply due to cancers among firefighters who were heroes in the September 11, 2001 terrorist attacks rescuing people in New York and Washington, D.C. Dill says many of these causes are wrapped up together in what he calls cultural brainwashing. Firefighters are trained to be strong, and some view it as a weakness to ask for help. To any firefighter contemplating suicide, Dill offers this advice. I would ask them to either call their peer support teams or call us, and we will find you a qualified counselor who works with fire and understands our culture. We will vet for free and find counselors you can work with, he says. He also wants firefighters to know we are at our strongest when we ask for help ourselves. To get help, or for more information on the Firefighter Behavioral Health Alliance, you can visit ffbha.org or call them at 847-209-8208. Again, that number is 847-209-8208. For immediate help in a crisis, you can also dial 911 or call the National Suicide Prevention Lifeline at 1-800-273-8255. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice. This is Miriam Raftery.
Tragedy has struck a Spring Valley couple swept over a waterfall in Hawaii while on vacation last weekend. According to witnesses, George and Gladys Novinger were swimming in a river above Rainbow Falls at a Hawaiian park in Hilo when they went under and were washed over the towering falls. Gladys was found unconscious and taken to a hospital where she later died. George is presumed dead, though as of this taping, his body has not been recovered due to a storm that halted the search. The couple, along with Gladys' son, Joseph Harmus III, owned Vineyard Hacienda in Spring Valley, a winery, bed and breakfast inn, and wedding venue. George Novinger also served on the Hamuld Ulsura Community Planning Group, where his presumed death leaves a vacancy to be filled. Harmus told the San Diego Union-Tribune that his parents will be deeply missed, adding, "I will always carry them in my heart, and I dedicate my life to their legacy." It is unclear what the future of the inn and winery will be. George Novinger was a retired diplomat in the U.S. State Department's Foreign Service. He had served in Japan, South Korea, Hong Kong, Brunei, Paraguay, and Syria, as well as serving as regional director of foreign missions and liaison to embassies and consuls in the southwestern states in the U.S. He was also active on the San Diego World Affairs Council and the City of San Diego's International Affairs Board, representing the city to greet mayors and official delegations visiting San Diego. Gladys Novinger, a native of Peru, had devoted efforts to raise funds to create a House of Peru cottage in Balboa Park, where her husband was also a volunteer. Donations to houseofperu.org are being accepted in the couple's memory. Greg Maness and his wife, PJ, owners of the Casi Cielo Winery at Maness Vineyards Design, have been close neighbors of the Novingers for over a decade. Greg Maness recalls, "We worked closely together as wine families do, pushing forward the wineries on Highway 94 movement, and together we had great success, planting their hillside vineyards and making wine together. We often shared many great lunches and dinners together, talking about the joys of life, family, and raising funds for their beloved House of Peru still being built in Balboa Park." Maness called the Novingers the best people in the world you would ever want to know, adding, "Together they were a dynamic power couple, accomplishing great visionary dreams. We laugh together a lot, and we're there for each other in times of uncertainty. There is a hole in the bottom of all of our hearts that will always ache when I remember Gladys and George and their family, but I do know this, every moment of their lives was filled with accomplishing wonderful things. They were happy, living life to its fullest with open hearts and open minds. They will be greatly missed. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Green Scene Report. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency has awarded 7 winners nationally in the EPA's Food Recovery Challenge, and 4 of those winners are in San Diego County. EPA Administrator Scott Pruitt says Food Recovery Challenge Award winners serve as role models in their communities and for other organizations, adding, their hard work and effective efforts to divert wasted food from landfills is paying off through social, financial, and environmental benefits. I encourage other organizations to replicate the successful food recovery operations of our challenge winners. Among the winners is the Ramona Unified High School District, which runs a district-wide collaborative wasted food reduction and composting program along with the County of San Diego. Students measured how much food is going to waste and send that data to the county. Now, prepared food suitable for donation is placed in a walk-in freezer and collected weekly by a local pantry and distributed to the underserved in the community. Another winner is Sprouts Farmers Market in Carlsbad, which has food rescue and food waste to farm programs. In 2016, Sprouts was able to provide more than 19 million pounds of nutritious foods to its communities, resulting in nearly 16 million meals. Cherokee Elementary School in San Diego, which has 400 students, all receiving free and reduced price meals, has adopted a model which allows students to decline some food items offered that they don't intend to consume and recovers certain foods and beverages to use in another meal service. Additionally, students separate their food scraps at lunch so they can be sent off-site for composting. The City of San Diego's Environmental Services Department's Commercial Food Waste Diversion Program has a comprehensive food recovery education program for commercial food providers. The program had over 80 participants in 2016, composting nearly 8,000 tons of wasted food. Participants included the largest generators of food waste in the city and all its larger venues, such as the Convention Center, Zoo, Safari Park, and SeaWorld San Diego, took part. In addition, participant sites are included in the commercial wasted food composting program. The San Diego International Airport provided service to over 20 million travelers in 2016. In 2013, the County Regional Airport Authority collaborated with a food service provider to collect coffee grounds and fruits for composting. The program now includes 40 restaurants and coffee shops collecting and composting all their pre-consumer food scraps, as well as post-consumer wasted food. By separating food from the waste stream, the airport has reduced the volume of material disposed as trash, diverting 340 tons of non-edible food waste to Miramar Greenery for composting. Wasted food is the single largest type of waste discarded each year in our everyday trash. That's roughly 73 billion pounds. In 2016, over 950 businesses, governments, and organizations participated in EPA's Food Recovery Challenge. Participants include organizations such as grocers, restaurants, educational institutions, and sports and entertainment venues, who together diverted 740,000 tons of food from being landfilled or incinerated, also saving businesses up to $37 million in avoided waste disposal fees.
A statewide gas tax hike that took effect November 1st under Senate Bill 1 raised gas excise taxes by 12 cents a gallon, also hiking up diesel fuel rates. An increase in vehicle registration fees is also slated to go into effect in January. The money is to be used to fix roads, highways, and bridges, as well as improving public transit. But now, a Republican-led political action committee called Reform California has launched an effort to repeal Senate Bill 1. They are trying to get 600,000 signatures needed to get the measure onto the statewide ballot next year. Carl DeMaio, a former San Diego councilman, is chair of Reform California. He says state legislators cross the line with these massive car and tax hikes, and we intend to give taxpayers the chance to reverse that decision with this initiative. Advocates of repeal argue that the law puts too much burden on taxpayers. The measure is estimated to cost the average consumer between $120 and $400 a year, including hidden costs, such as increases in the price of food and other goods that are shipped. But a coalition called Fix Our Roads includes businesses, labor, and transportation groups in support of the increased taxes. According to a statement issued by the Fix Our Roads Coalition, California drivers will have safer, less congested roads thanks to SB 1. Every single community in California will receive funding to make road safety improvements, fill potholes, and repair local streets, freeways, bridges, and overpasses, the group notes, adding that SB 1 comes with strict accountability requirements to assure that the funds will only be used for transportation. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier.
Lions, Tigers, and Bears, an exotic animal sanctuary in Alpine, has completed a new multi-acre habitat with creature comforts including a large pond, a waterfall, climbing platforms, natural terrain, and large trees. Louis, a rare white African lion, was first released into the new habitat area on Tuesday, following two lionesses released earlier this month. The first public release on Saturday, December 2nd, coincides with the facility's annual holiday party benefit. The new habitat's permanent residents will include Diego, a California bobcat rescued as a kitten, who was recently returned to the Alpine facility, which will serve as his forever home. For more information, you can visit lionstigersandbears.org. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Valerie Watts.
You're listening to the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news for our region.
This is East County Magazine's Crime Beat. On the streets, reporting on crimes impacting communities across our region, helping to keep you safe and informed.
This is Gene Carpenter with a Crime Beat report. Five women have accused San Diego Sheriff's Deputy Richard Fisher of sexual misconduct, including sexual assault. He has been placed on administrative leave pending investigation of the complaints. The women are represented by attorney Dan Gillian, and their names have not yet been released. The first woman to come forward alleges that Deputy Fisher came with other deputies to her home for a welfare check on August 20th, but later returned alone and asked to use the restroom, the San Diego Union-Tribune reports. The woman claims Fisher told her he thought she was cute, hugged her, and rubbed his hands down her torso, arms, and buttocks. The second complaint alleges that over a year ago, in August 2016, Fisher came with other deputies to investigate a burglary at a San Marcos woman's home. She also accuses Fisher of returning alone and asking to use the bathroom, then hugging her without permission. An East County woman, in a third case, alleges that Deputy Fisher groped and fondled her repeatedly after a traffic stop with her husband, also in the vehicle. The woman says the deputy found prescription drugs, which he claimed were illegal. He then allegedly handcuffed her, put her in the back of the sheriff's vehicle, and fondled her breast, saying, "I hope your husband doesn't mind." The woman told CBS 8 that she feared she would be raped. She claims the deputy fondled her again at the Lakeside substation and at Las Colinas Women's Prison, but she was not jailed. Instead, he issued her a ticket, drove her home, and reportedly asked, "Can I get a hug?" The fourth victim is from El Cajon. She contends that Deputy Fisher grabbed her breast and asked if she had nude photos, her attorney told 10 News. In the fifth complaint, a 64-year-old woman alleges that after taking her report of domestic violence, Fisher told her she was attractive, hugged her without consent, squeezed her buttocks, and pulled her hand down to his groin, 10 News reports. The victim's attorney contends that Fisher should have been taken out of the field earlier and says he plans to file litigation on behalf of the women. Fisher has been featured on the sheriff's Twitter feed with a canine dog named Magic. He appeared in June at Fido Fest in Santee demonstrating how a canine apprehends a suspect. A statement from the sheriff's department indicates the department is barred by law from releasing details on the investigation, but adds, "Any allegations of this nature are taken very seriously, and the department will take the appropriate actions at the conclusion of the investigation."
Libraries are vital sources of information for students, researchers, and the public. But now the city of Escondido has voted to privatize its public library by hiring Library Systems, a Maryland-based company, over the objections of the library's trustees. The city claims it could save $400,000 a year through private operation of the library. Now, two library patrons, Roy and Mary Garrett, have filed a lawsuit against Escondido that claims the action is illegal under California law, Times of San Diego reports. Their suit contends that Escondido's actions violates state law. Their attorney, Alan Garassi, says, "By forcing privatization of our library, the city council failed the community, failed the library workers, and failed to follow the law. Privatizing the library could also stop construction of a proposed new library at Escondido's Grape Day Park." Roy Garrett, a longtime supporter of the library, says, "Now the city manager, the mayor, and city council majority have broken faith with all the Escondido residents, taxpayers, volunteers, library employees, and donors who created and nurtured this heart of our city, our 100-year-old public library, and turned it into a profit center for a corporation. The county's 33 libraries are all public, as are libraries run by other cities in our region. But privatization has become a hot-button issue across the nation. Public libraries began in colonial times in the U.S., but those early libraries were available only to those who could afford fees for the services. With the rise of free public education, communities came to view access to books and other information as a public right, and the modern-day public library system was born. Modern libraries provide much more than books, including access to computers for those who can't afford them or lack high-speed internet access at home. The public can check out music, videos, and movies. Libraries offer programs such as literacy for adults and story time for children, guest lectures, and cultural presentations. Could such projects be slashed or eliminated if public libraries are put under private control? The American Library Association opposes the effort and has published a book called Keeping Public Libraries Public. The book raises serious questions, such as whether private companies would value profit over the best interests of the community, whether privacy rights would be protected, whether intellectual freedoms would be valued, and a diversity of materials kept available, whether librarians and other library staff would have appropriate training, whether digital technologies would be kept up to date, and whether a private library can maintain public trust, putting benefits and needs of the public first over corporate owners. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is John Fistier. There's an easy way to feel good this holiday season. Put a smile on the face of a less fortunate kid. It's easy to do. Just drop off a new, unwrapped toy into the Toys for Tots donation box at one of four county airports: Gillespie Field in El Cajon, Ramona Airport in Ramona, McClellan Palomar Airport in Carlsbad, or Fallbrook Airpark in Fallbrook. You'll be helping county airports and the U.S. Marine Corps Reserve make sure a bunch of kids have a happier holiday. All of the donation boxes will be open until Saturday, December 16th. All donated toys will be given out to children in San Diego County communities. As in previous years, there will be two special collections at Ramona and Fallbrook airports. Marines in full uniform will personally collect toys from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 9th at Ramona Airport, and from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday, December 16th at Fallbrook Airpark. Donations can include new unwrapped toys, bikes, games, dolls, stuffed animals, and just about anything that will help brighten up a child's holidays. Pilots can fly in to deliver their donations at the airports. So, to get that good holiday feeling, drop off a new toy for a child.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the mountains to the sea.
The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. This is Miriam Raftery with a Capitol Report. Just in time for Thanksgiving, President Donald Trump's White House sent Congress a skimpy disaster relief funding request that includes not one penny for survivors of the worst wildfires in California history, those that ravaged the wine region and other parts of Northern California recently. The measure provides only bare-bones funding for states that suffered hurricane damage. A letter sent to Trump asking for $7.4 billion in federal disaster aid for these fire victims in California was signed by our state's governor, Democratic congressional members, and senators, but only one Republican congressman. Some Republicans did sign a separate letter of their own, including San Diego Congressman Duncan Hunter and Daryl Issa, asking the president for disaster relief to aid fire survivors. The fires killed 42 people, burned 8,900 structures, and charred 245,000 acres, the equivalent in size of San Francisco, Sacramento, and several other counties combined. The devastation far surpassed even the Cedar Fire and the 2007 firestorms in San Diego County, which until recently were the worst in our state's history. President Trump's snub of disaster victims is unprecedented in American history, leaving victims of California's worst natural disaster to fend for themselves. No reason for the denial of funding by the president for California was given. But some have suggested a political motive, since red states such as Florida and Texas that got hurricane relief funds voted for Trump, and blue California did not. It's a dangerous precedent to base disaster relief on partisan politics. And the president's action is also a betrayal of the many voters in California who did cast their ballots for Trump, even though the state's Electoral College votes went for his rival, Hillary Clinton. The message is clear. Those who did not support this president are getting burned when it comes to help to rebuild their homes and lives.
Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, has rounded up and detained an estimated 200 Vietnamese and Cambodian immigrants in the Bay Area, raising concern among California's large Asian American population. The unprecedented detentions are part of President Donald Trump's effort to deport immigrants with criminal records, even if the offenses occurred long ago. According to a letter sent to Homeland Security Secretary Elaine Duke and signed by California Senate Leader Kevin De Leon and Asian legislators, these detainees have been living law-abiding lives in California for decades. Some came as infants or children and have never known life in another country. The letter states, many Southeast Asian Americans are survivors of the Vietnam War and the Khmer Rouge genocide. They were part of the largest refugee resettlement in our country's history and were placed in poverty-ridden neighborhoods with significant crime rates. These factors, coupled with language barriers, war trauma, and lack of adequate resources, contributed to numerous challenges adjusting to their new home. The letter adds that these individuals have overcome youthful indiscretion to become productive and valued members of society. The San Jose Mercury News reports that many of those detained have been sent to detention centers in the Deep South, far away from families, and some have already been deported. But some deportations may be illegal. That's because of a repatriation agreement forged between Vietnam and the U.S. in 2008, which provided that Vietnamese immigrants who came to America before 1995 would be safe from deportation. Activists have told the Mercury News that some of the recent detainees arrived before 1995. There are no such protections for Cambodian refugees, as long as annual limits under a 2002 repatriation agreement are not exceeded. Assemblyman Ash Kalra, a San Jose Democrat, calls the detentions and deportations unjust, adding that these actions, quote, speak to the federal administration's lack of compassion for our Southeast Asian immigrant population, including those who escaped political persecution and genocide to come to the United States. He calls the recent deportations in violation of international agreements a betrayal of our country's commitment to these communities, and only further undermines the integrity and sanctity of our country's diplomatic agreements. The actions could have repercussions in San Diego County as well, which is home to a high number of immigrants from Vietnam, Cambodia, and other Southeast Asian countries. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Jonathan Goetz.
The people who run many of California's counties are speaking out against a tax bill that is about to go up for a vote in the U.S. Senate, worried that it will eliminate important deductions and force them to cut services or raise taxes or fees to compensate. They're meeting in Sacramento today for the 123rd Annual Conference of the California State Association of Counties. Sonoma County Supervisor David Rabbit says the recent wildfires devastated his area, so the last thing people need is to pay more in taxes.
For my county, where we just lost 5,100 homes and people are struggling to rebuild their lives, let alone their homes, they're going to be paying higher taxes on top of that.
The Senate bill proposes to eliminate the state and local tax deduction, which allows people who itemize to deduct what they pay in state and local taxes from their federal returns. Economists say people are more likely to accept state and local taxes if they can deduct them and could rebel against them if they cannot. Rabbit says eliminating the so-called SALT deduction would cause a cash crunch for counties, which are required to provide certain services regardless of how much revenue they're collecting. Plus, he says, eliminating the deduction amounts to double taxation.
People are already paying taxes, and then their taxes get taxed. And unfortunately, it looks like it's really aimed primarily at California, but at those states that perhaps didn't endorse the current administration.
County execs say they're also opposed to changes that affect the types of bonds cities and counties use to pay for infrastructure projects such as airports, hospitals, and affordable housing. For Public News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
This is KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, bringing you public interest news across our border region.
Welcome to Destination East County with your hosts, Valerie Watts
and Jonathan Goetz, bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes Alpine's Christmas Parade of Lights and Snow Festival, the North Pole Limited Train Ride in Campo, Lemon Grove's Holiday Bonfire with ice skating and a hayride, Ramona's Tree Lighting with Sleigh Rides, a Jingle Paws Walk for Pets, Lakeside Spirit of Christmas on Main, a Supermoon Hike up Falcon Mountain in Julian, and a Christmas Cabaret in La Mesa.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including La Mesa's Holiday in the Village, San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra's Sounds Good Holiday Concert, a Christmas Carol in Julian, singer Tony Orlando in concert at Sequan, a big band and jazz concert in Santee, and Carnaval Fantastique at Sequan.
So stay tuned for all of these events and many more.
You're invited to celebrate a rural Christmas on Friday, December 1st at the 22nd Annual Alpine Village Christmas Parade of Lights and Snow Festival in Alpine. A parade of glittering, lighted entries begins at 6:30 p.m. on Alpine Boulevard, where shops are aglow with holiday lights. The parade ends at the annual Free Snow Festival at the Alpine Creek Town Center, complete with sledding on a hill with real snow. There will also be children's activities, entertainment, and a visit by Santa Claus, as well as vendors and food for purchase. For more information, you can visit alpinechamber.com.
The Pacific Southwest Railway Museum in Campo invites you to take a ride aboard the North Pole Limited, a special holiday train ride, departing Fridays and Saturdays from December 1st through December 23rd at 5 p.m. and 7 p.m. Guests are advised to arrive at least 45 minutes early to get tickets for the North Pole Limited. Once you're on board, Santa's elves will sing Christmas carols, read a popular Christmas story to children, and pass out cookies and hot chocolate to all passengers. The train will stop at Santa's workshop to pick up Santa and Mrs. Claus, who will visit with all passengers as the North Pole Limited heads back to the Campo Depot. This popular ride does sell out, so advance reservations are recommended through the Pacific Southwest Railway Museum website at psrm.org.
The City of Lemon Grove will hold its 20th annual holiday Light Up the Grove bonfire on December 1st from 12 noon to 8 p.m. The bonfire lighting at 6 p.m. will be preceded by game booths, a rock climbing wall, hay rides, arts and crafts, live music, and skating on an actual ice rink. Free hot chocolate and outreach from the city's nonprofit groups, including the Lemon Grove Historical Society's traditional open house, will be part of the fun. Event hours are extended this year to mark Lemon Grove's 40th anniversary of incorporation.
Pet owners are invited to bring their dogs for the annual Jingle Paws Walk to benefit the El Cajon Animal Shelter. This year, Jingle Paws will be held at the Water Conservation Garden at Cuyamaca College. Registration opens at 9 a.m., with the walk starting at 9:30 and activities continuing through noon, including a photo with Santa, a pet owner costume contest, animal rescue groups and pet adoptions, vendors, silent auction, drawings, music, and prizes. For more information and to register, visit acesfoundation.org.
Ramona Chamber of Commerce invites you to Ramona's 25th annual Christmas tree lighting. Main Street will come alive on Saturday, December 2nd from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. with sleigh rides, carolers, crafters, a DJ playing music, a classic car display, a Find the Elf contest, and photos with Santa at Ramona's Town Hall. Shops will be open late, and the lighting of the annual Christmas tree will be held in front of the Guy B. Woodward Museum. For details, visit ramonachamber.com.
Lakeside's Chamber of Commerce invites you to celebrate the spirit of Christmas on Main Street in downtown Lakeside on December 2nd from 4 to 9 p.m. This event features Santa Claus, craft booths, jumps and rides for kids, performances by local school students, and the lighting of a community Christmas tree. Find details at lakesidechamber.org and at lakesiderodeo.com.
You're invited to hike Volcan Mountain in Julian for a supermoon viewing on Saturday, December 2nd from 3 p.m. to 9 p.m. A supermoon is a full moon that appears larger and brighter than normal because its orbit is closer than usual to the Earth. Join Ranger Bill on a 7-mile early winter hike. This hike has 1,000 feet of elevation gain, so come prepared. Ranger Bill will tell you all about the geography, flora, and fauna of the area as you head up Volcan Mountain, reaching the summit right at sunset, and see expansive views of Julian and the desert. Then the light of the silvery supermoon will show the path back down. For more information, visit the Volcan Mountain Wilderness Preserve website or call 760-765-4098.
Lamplighters Theater in La Mesa invites you to get in the holiday spirit at a Christmas cabaret showing December 1st through 17th. Lamplighters presents an uplifting showcase of local talent performing seasonal favorites, not only from Christmas, but many December holidays as well. For tickets and details, visit lamplighterslamesa.com.
Now for a preview of coming attractions.
The La Mesa Village Association hosts its annual Holiday in the Village celebration on Saturday, December 9th from 10 a.m. to 10 p.m. and Sunday, December 10th from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. Stroll through the streets of La Mesa's historic downtown and enjoy live music and dance, cozy fires, craft vendors, food, and a kids area with holiday movies and activities. For more information, you can visit LaMesaVillageAssociation.org.
On Sunday, December 10th at 3 p.m., the San Diego Festival Chorus and Orchestra will present the Sounds Good holiday concert at College Avenue Baptist Church, featuring the Christmas portion of Handel's Beloved Messiah, along with selections of popular holiday music. In addition to the chorus and orchestra, there will also be solo performers. The San Diego Festival Chorus was founded over 15 years ago by Maestro Mostardo and is made up of singers and players from the community who love to make music. The chorus is always happy to welcome new members. You can find more information and tickets for the holiday concert at sandiegofestivalchorus.org.
Julian Theatre Company will present Charles Dickens' holiday classic, A Christmas Carol. This timeless tale focuses on the miserly Ebenezer Scrooge as he is visited by the spirits of Christmas past, present, and future. Scrooge's clerk, Bob Cratchit, and his impoverished family, including the frail Tiny Tim, face a grim future unless Scrooge can find redemption and discover the true spirit of Christmas. Performances will be held at Julian Town Hall on the weekends of December 8th through the 10th and again December 15th and 16th. For tickets and details, visit juliantheatercompany.com.
Singer Tony Orlando will be live in concert at Sequan on December 17th and 18th. His career began at age 16 with his first hit song, Halfway to Paradise. His band, Tony Orlando and Don, had several major hits in the 1970s, including Candida, Knock Three Times, and Tie a Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree, as well as the Tony Orlando and Don Show on TV. After the band broke up, Orlando has continued as a solo singer with performances in Las Vegas, Branson, Missouri, and now El Cajon. For tickets, visit Sequan.com.
Off-Broadway Live Theater in Santee will present A Big Band Christmas with the Gaslamp Quarter Jazz Orchestra and Leonard Patton on Friday, December 22nd at 7 p.m. The theater is located at 9490 Cuyamaca Street in Santee. For more information or tickets to this special holiday concert, call 619-988-LIVE or visit offbroadwaylive.com.
Carnaval Fantastique will bring performers from around the world to Sequan on January 7th in a celebration of music and action that combines gravity-defying acrobatics, contortionists, jugglers, comedy, beautiful dancers, and dynamic laser special effects. Atmospheric laser beams fill the theater as colorful animated laser graphics on the screen's center stage introduce each of the performers. The finale highlights a one-of-a-kind laser salute to America patriotic performance. You're invited to come one, come all, it's Carnaval. For tickets, you can visit Sequan.com.
That's all for this week.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around East County!
This is Miriam Raftery, and I'm here with John Fastier. This holiday season, if you're looking for some safe conversation topics to liven up your next gathering with friends and family without bringing up politics, here are some fascinating holiday trivia facts to share.
Candy canes are stocking stuffer traditions, but they were actually invented to keep children quiet during church.
In medieval times, the main dish served at Christmas dinners was peacock, not turkey.
Jingle Bells was originally written for Thanksgiving, not Christmas.
Christmas trees were once considered pagan symbols, but today 350 million of them are grown on Christmas tree farms in the U.S., where 98% of all Christmas trees sold are now sustainably raised. A Christmas tree grows for 15 years on average before it is cut.
The world's tallest snowman was actually a snow woman, standing over 122 feet tall. She was built by townspeople in Bethel, Maine, with wreaths as eyes, skis for eyelashes, tires as buttons, and trees for her arms.
According to the Bible, Magi, also known as wise men, brought gifts of gold, frankincense, and myrrh to the Christ child born in a manger. The term magi derives from ancient Greece and Persia, where it meant magicians or astronomers.
The magi reportedly followed the Star of Bethlehem. To this day, scientists are not sure what that star was. Possibly a conjunction of two planets, a comet, a supernova, or something else that lit up the sky.
The first electric Christmas lights to light up the sky were invented by Thomas Edison.
Hanukkah is also called the Festival of Lights. A menorah is lit for 8 nights and traditionally placed in a window to remind the outside world of the miracle of oil that burned for 8 days after rededication of a temple in Jerusalem.
Originally, the only Hanukkah gifts were small amounts of money known as gelt, a tradition that was designed to teach children the importance of charity.
The first Hanukkah party in the White House was hosted by President George W. Bush, a tradition that continues to this day.
The most popular Christmas song of all times, White Christmas, was written by Irving Berlin, a Jewish songwriter.
Americans spend 6 times more on gifts than food during the holiday season, but they are also more apt to donate to charities at this time of year.
Santa Claus would have to travel at over 5 million miles per hour in order to deliver presents to all of the children on Earth in a single night.
The tradition of making New Year's resolutions was started by the ancient Babylonians, who actually celebrated the New Year in springtime. The most common resolution was to return borrowed farm equipment.
Roman Emperor Julius Caesar established the Julian calendar that we use today, with January 1st as the first day of the new year.
Today, the most common resolution is to lose weight. Not surprising, since the average Christmas dinner in America contains over 7,000 calories.
Dropping a ball in Times Square to ring in the new year began in 1907 because fireworks had been banned as too dangerous. The ball has been a New Year's tradition ever since, except in 1942 and 1943 when it was canceled due to wartime restrictions.
The first ball was made of iron and wood, adorned with 100 light bulbs. It weighed 700 pounds. Nowadays, the ball weighs nearly 12,000 pounds and shimmers with 2,668 Waterford crystals.
All year long, visitors to Times Square in New York City write their New Year's wishes on pieces of confetti. At the stroke of midnight on New Year's Eve, those wishes are included in over a ton of confetti that showers the crowd gathered to ring in the new year. And now from all of us at East County Magazine, to all of you, we wish you a very Merry Christmas, joyous Hanukkah, and a Happy New Year.
This is John Fisteer with a tip for travelers. If you're planning to travel out of the San Diego International Airport during next year, you may want to avoid late-night flights. The runway is being torn up nightly to repave it a section at a time, and so it will be closed each night from midnight to 5 a.m. Although flights running on time shouldn't be affected, if a flight is late, it will be diverted to another airport, such as LAX in Los Angeles, or a smaller airport, causing inconvenience to travelers. The runway work began November 1st, and already a British Airways flight has been diverted, the San Diego Union-Tribune reported. The airline already has a curfew banning departures from 11:30 p.m. to 6:30 a.m., so incoming flights are where delays, if they occur, would be most apt to happen, since in the past, landings were allowed at all hours. Air carriers are reportedly adjusting their schedules to avoid the closures. Upgrades to the 9,400-foot-long runway include energy-saving lighting, as well as new asphalt, and in the heaviest traffic sections, concrete. The total cost of $16.7 million is funded by the San Diego County Airport Authority.
This is Valerie Watts with a Consumer Product Safety Report. If your child's holiday wish list includes a hoverboard, you may want to tell Santa to think twice before delivering one. The Consumer Product Safety Commission issued 7 more hoverboard recalls Tuesday due to fire and explosion hazards. The commission has previously recalled many other hoverboard models. According to a safety alert issued by the commission, At least 250 fires related to hoverboards have occurred since 2015. A hoverboard caused a house fire in Pennsylvania in March that killed two young girls ages 2 and 10. At least 13 people have been burned by hoverboards, and they have caused over $4 million in property damage. Lithium-ion battery packs can overheat, causing the hoverboards to ignite or burst into flames. To see if your hoverboard is compliant with federal regulations, you can check for a UL 2272 certification label. If your hoverboard was sold before January 29, 2016, it is not compliant. But even some UL 2272 compliant hoverboards have overheated and sparked fires, so there is no assurance of safety with any of the devices. If you own a recalled model, you should stop using it immediately and contact the manufacturer. For any hoverboard, charge it only when you are home, awake, and in the room to watch it. Report any incidents of hoverboards overheating, smoking, or starting fires to saferproducts.gov. You can find information on the makes and models included in the current and previous recalls at the Hoverboard Information Center on the Consumer Product Safety Commission website at cpsc.gov.
A free press is the foundation of our democracy. You can support independent public media for our region. Please support KNSJ by making a donation or a sustaining monthly pledge of any amount at www.knsj.org. We're your community radio station, KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, serving the San Diego border region from the mountains to the sea. And now we hope our readers will enjoy this excerpt from a U.S. Army Band Christmas concert back in 2009. It's got a little bit of country in it for our East County listeners. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, A.K. Jules, Brian Boyko, Royalty Free Music, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.